Welcome to episode 14 of the Never Iron Anything podcast. This podcast has been created to keep you occupied during the virus lockdown. My name's Tony Esmond, writer of the Hoare Chronicles, Cockney Kung Fu and Atomic Hercules. Today we have yet another Scottish person. This is becoming the Scottish podcast, I've got to tell you, a bit like the Scottish play. this time it's a man who writes about a Lang Walk, one that many of us have done after quite a few too many beers. He's also just started his own podcast, which we're going to hear about a bit as well. I've just noticed as well that his Skype icon is a picture of him doing a Lang Walk as well, which is quite fitting.
It is.
Yes, folks, it's Pete Watson. Hello, Pete. How you doing, man?
Hello. Not so bad yourself.
Yeah, not bad. I'm always reminded of your book, The Lang Walk, because it's one of the most read things on my blog. The little preview I did.
Is it?
That. Yeah. Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's okay. Funny the things that sort of catch fire, but that's... I think it's up to about 3,500 reads now. Well, I looked through it the other day. I thought, oh, there you go. It's definitely in the top 10.
Yeah.
Good. Good-o. So the aim, we'll talk about that later, I'm sure. So the aim of the episode is to give you an oversight or an overview of one single artist or one single comic or one single series and show what can be done in comics in the hope that you'll go away and purchase the aforementioned comics. So, Pete, who have you chosen to do on this episode? Or what have you chosen to do, rather?
It's a nice little two-parter from 1986. It's Alan Moore and Kurt Swan's Whatever Happened to the Man of Tomorrow, the final Silver Bronze Age Superman story.
It is, isn't it? It's a funny incredibly one. Good. Firstly, you took pity on me because people have been choosing very long runs of comics, which I have to say is not it's not a chore, but sometimes I think, oh my God, I've got to read the whole of that series by tomorrow. What's going on in my life? But so it's not too bad. But it's a nice two issues. It is... fair to say, an imaginary story that has got huge implications, which is not something you don't hear. There's never a huge implication attached to a what if or a Elseworlds, is there? But this one, there is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and it sort of rolls a bit into your upcoming podcast about DC, isn't it? About the ages of DC, because this has a profound effect on that. Yeah. So for those that don't know, it was written in 1986, two-part story, but the actual story takes place in 1996. It runs between, well, certainly the start of it does anyway. It runs between two comics, Superman 423 and Action Comics 583. Both came out in September 1986. It was written by Alan Moore. Pencils by Kurt Swan. The inker in Superman 423 was George Perez, and the inker in 583 was Kurt Schaffenberger. I believe that's how you say it. Is that right? Yeah.
Yep.
Letters by Todd Klein. Colours by Gene D'Angelo. And edited by Julie Schwartz, the famous, probably the most famous DC editor, I would say. And you've got his autobiography, or is it a biography in front of you there, haven't you?
No, it's autobiography.
Is it? I need to get that. Yeah, I really need to get a copy of that. It sounds brilliant.
Yeah, Man of Two Worlds, it's called, so yes.
Ah, right, I must get that. Yeah. So we're going to have a little chat about that, and we're going to have a little chat about the characters involved in it. For those that don't know, it is considered to be the last story of an era of Superman. Some people say it's the last story of the Silver Age, but it actually takes place towards the end of if not beyond the end of the Bronze Age, doesn't it, really? I suppose the aesthetics of Kurt Swan are most attached to the Silver Age, I'm going to say.
He started actually right back in the Golden Age.
He
did Boy Commandos and stuff like that when he first started, and that was back in the 40s. After a while, he eventually got onto the Superbooks, and that's kind of what he's been known for.
It really is. Yeah, and I don't know how old you are. I'm an old man in my 50s, and he's my Superman artist, I'll be honest with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's the one that I still go back if I see the odd one in a cheap bin at a Comic Mart or something. I'll pick it up because there's a superb nostalgia and weirdness attached to the book sometimes. Yeah,
absolutely.
I'm sure we'll talk a bit more about him. We'll get into him in a second. But what age were you when you picked it up? What were the circumstances of your first reading of this, Pete?
This was before I had discovered comic shops, so basically you picked up comics wherever you could find them, and the weird thing about this two-parter is I actually picked up the second part first.
Okay.
I can tell because there's still 20 pence written on it in pencil on the back of it.
Who'd have thought?
I got it from the Glasgow Barras back in the day. There was a massive place that sold comics there, and there was just piles piled high, and all the prices were on pencil on the back. And myself and one of my friends used to go along there every week or so and just try and clear them out as much as we could
Mate, that sounds
with 20
amazing.
pence
Do
a
you remember when
pot.
you used to see loads of comics in second-hand shops and stuff like that, didn't you?
Yeah, that's true. They'd absolutely everything apart from X-Men. You would never see an X-Men comic there.
Everyone's storing them to put their kids through college or whatever, as they say in American podcasts. I bought mine off the shelf. I believe it was in the comic shops by that point. I was mid-teens, so it was probably the Globe, which was a comic shop in Ipswich where I was at boarding school, and I used to sort of leg it down there in my shorts because we had to wear our school uniform into town. So I used to leg it down, not get beaten up by the local kids, and leg it back with a load of comics under my arm. It was never an easy thing. Sometimes I used to wear my little hat. I looked like one of the crankies. And I bought it there. What was your first you well, let's say what was your initial reaction to it? Did you know, had you heard about the Alan Moore thing before?
No, to be honest, at the time it was basically, when you first get into comics, you're just trying to absorb everything and finding out what you like. Yeah, this was really me doing that. I mean, I'd picked up when I was a really young boy, some Superman stuff from like a local corner shop, because I was really. I saw Superman the movie when I was a wee boy, and just really it had a massive impact on me. I still think it's the best superhero movie ever made.
Mate, I absolutely love that film, and
So
I can't, I won't hear a
yeah.
bad word against it. I've got still, because it was long before I had a video recorder as a kid. I have audio tapes of it where I recorded it with you know, you had to press the two buttons down to record the television. And there's a noise of my dog barking and my parents' dog barking in the background at one point, you
Oh,
know.
that's sensational.
Not that I'm a hoarder,
No, that's
obviously.
amazing.
But
No,
so
that movie's.
you hadn't heard it was Alan then. You hadn't heard it was Alan Moore in it.
I didn't know who Alan Moore was. I'll be
Right.
honest, I was actually just getting into it, and I thought this story was incredible. And as I said, I got the second part first, and hunted and hunted to try and find the first part. I think I can't be 100% certain, but I think I got the first part in AKA Books and Comics, which was the first comic shop I came across.
Ah, okay. In Glasgow, that was it, or?
Glasgow, yeah, quite famous for being a place that, Grant Morrison, Mark Miller, and lots of Glasgow creators kind of all first went to. And yeah, it was so that was a long time ago again. That was about 1987, I would
Oh,
say
so
then.
not
It must
far
be.
after it. Yeah, not long after it had
Yeah.
come out. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about Grant Morrison because he's got quite a strong opinion about this comic, hasn't he? Yeah, I heard him on Fat Man on Batman talking a little bit. I think it was that podcast a few years ago saying about it. Okay, so what was happening? So let's sort of put the setting of what happened. Is it was around? Was it just post-crisis or crisis was just happening? Wasn't it? Crisis in.
Christ finished in December of 85, so this is about 6 months later. This is in
Right.
this weird place where DC hadn't quite worked out exactly what they were going to do next.
Yeah.
So a
So they'd
lot of
actually
the
stopped
kind of
Superman,
went.
I think, or but were about to, weren't they? They'd stopped it in
Yeah,
order for
that's.
Alan, for John Byrne to take over, I think.
Yeah, the month after this came out, Man of Steel 1 and 2 came out because
Right.
they were fortnightly books. So yes, so that was the very next month. Actually, the month this came out, you also had Watchmen number 1 and Dark Knight 4 out the exact same month.
Really? That's amazing. Well, that's the month, that must be the month I went to UKAC, where I picked those issues up because my Dave Gibbons and Frank Miller were at it. Okay, that's interesting. What a time, man. What a time.
86, the year it all changed.
It really is, isn't
So
it? Yeah. So presumably, Alan Moore was on Swamp Thing at the time then, I'm guessing. That was,
Yeah, he'd done Swamp Thing for quite a while. He'd done a few other bits and pieces for DC as well. He'd done a Green Arrow story as a backup and
Of course he
detective. He'd
has,
done a
yeah.
bit of Vigilance.
Yeah.
Man, I don't think he'd done any of his Green Lantern villains at this point. Might have
Okay.
been after that. And of course, there was For the Man Who Is Everything, that amazing Superman annual as well.
Yeah, with Gibbons that one. Yeah, I reread that today as well, funny enough. Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh,
Yeah.
wow.
Yeah, I really like that one.
I tried to
Yeah.
find my copy of that. It's buried somewhere, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So what happened was this was originally meant to be for Siegel to write, I think, wasn't it? That's the story.
Yeah, I've actually. Julie Schwartz talks about that in his book.
Oh, right, okay.
I've got the bit here. Yeah, so this is also Julie Schwartz's swan song
Yes.
with Superman as well, and he wanted to get, the Dream Team to work on it.
It's a real
And obviously,
significant issue for that, isn't it? It really is. People don't realise, because everyone goes, oh, this is the best ever Superman story, which I'm going to contest in a minute with you. But the it is very impactful in what happened to the industry at this point. Julie Schwartz was worked at DC for 42 years. You know.
Yeah.
So, sorry, mate, you're going to say. Yeah.
That's actually that spin off aside to a second.
Yeah.
This two parter isn't just a story, it's a bridge. It's a bridge between the Bronze Age and the modern age of comics. And the fact that they've got Alan Moore, who's basically heralding in this new modern age, and Kurt Swan and Julie Schwartz, the most old school of old school, all in this same book. And it really is incredible, the fact that it's quite a dark story, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's got a great ending. It's still very dark, so it does bridge both the old and the new.
It's funny like that, because it's like you say, it's dark, but there's moments of Silver Age in it as well, aren't there?
There's some great Silver Age nonsense in it. It's superb.
And I will get this out now, because you know I'm going to say it, but there's at least two references to fucking in it.
Yes, there are indeed.
So you're going to say about what Julie Shorts had to say about it, dude?
Yeah, he said for his swan song with Supes, he wanted the best writer for it, but who could it be? And he thought there's only one choice, and that's Jerry Siegel. So he called up Jerry and arranged to meet him at San Diego Comic Con to discuss it.
Right.
And he offered him it, and he was thrilled, but he thought, I'll have to do some homework on what the Man of Steel has been up to over recent years.
Yeah, over 40 years or something, yeah.
Yeah, then they hit a stumbling block because Jerry would have had to sign a work-for-hire contract in order to get paid, and he had promised his brother-in-law that he would never do that again after losing all the rights to Superman, so that all fell apart then.
Because there was a lot of heat around that, especially around the times of the movies, because I think Neil Adams was sort of coaching him through, wasn't he? Coaching them both through, getting actually some kind of money back from it.
And it's only really because of the creation of Superboy that they actually didn't get something back from it. But that's another story for another time, I think.
Yeah, definitely.
Julie went for breakfast at the con with Alan Moore. And he had a good working relationship with him. And he mentioned his predicament to him and, maybe to try and get some ideas from him.
Yeah.
And then, just a direct quote from the book, at that point, he literally leapt out of his chair, reached across the table, put his hands around my neck and said, if you let anyone else but me write that story, I'll kill you. And since I didn't expect it to be murder, I agreed. That's Julie Schwartz's own words there. So, straight from the horse's mouth.
Oh, nice. I didn't realise that bit of deal. There's some great interviews. I was watching some YouTube videos of Julie Schwartz of the weekend on YouTube.
Yeah.
You can see what a geezer he is, can't you? There's one interview, he just goes, he's going to the interview. Come on, mate. Come on, hurry up. Yeah, it's like this.
Yeah, definitely didn't waste any time. He's really... It's so good.
So Moore takes it on, and Kurt Swan's going to draw it. And I think quite right too. Kurt Swan should be drawing it. The first issue opens with an interview between a reporter has turned up, and for all intents and purposes, Lois Lane has married someone else, we imagine, because Superman has died, we think. And she's got a baby, so there's a little shot of a baby through the doorway as well, isn't there? You can see that she's had a kid. She's slightly older, but she's not drawn super older. And he starts interviewing her, and she sort of throws herself into the story. Now, let's talk a little bit of art about this, because I remember seeing this as a kid or as a teenager and thinking, I really like George Perez. George Perez was really up there for me, his new Teen Titans, his Avengers stuff, just loved it. But I think he overpowers Kurt Swan a bit on this. It's not the Kurt that I knew. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I was going to say, see if you look at the panel where you first see the reporter's face, that's pure Perez.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely on page two. And then later on, there's one with Supes flying. What page is that one again? That is really, really Perez. The bottom of page 16, that last panel is pure Perez.
Yeah. When he lands, when you first see him and he lands amongst all the fire engines and stuff there, Kurt Swan never drew him so cut, I suppose is the way to say it, is it? So sort of muscular.
Yeah.
Kurt Swan's was like somebody's barrel-chested dad who could give you a clump when he really, to a certain extent, a broad-shouldered geezer. But this guy is proper,
Yeah, it was more cartoony, Kurzweil, though, you know, he still could do a lot of detail. But when you look at that panel, you're talking about
Yeah.
all the detail in the building and the fire. That's Perez
It
that's
is.
added in the detail, I think.
Yeah, it really is.
So, yeah, it's,
It's
But it really works.
it
As I said,
does.
it bridges the old and the new. It's
And
fantastic.
I remember seeing it and thinking, oh, this must be, because I'd not heard about it. I thought this must be something special because they've got Perez on it. Now, Perez was hot stuff. George Perez was hot stuff at the time, wasn't he? He probably cost a few quid to get him on this, I'm going to say. Or maybe he just wanted to be involved with Alan Moore. I don't know. Maybe that's the thing, Alan Moore, or this is like, maybe he knew what he was getting into, sort of thing. It's a
Well,
funny
I
one.
think there must have been a huge buzz about this book.
Yeah.
Really, there must have been a huge buzz. So, and the fact, you get the top A-list talent on it, the iconic people, and Perez had just come off Crisis. He's just come off Titans. It's not like, he was working and developing Wonder Woman at the time.
Yeah, I was going to say that
There's
must be his
so
next project. Yeah.
so much on his plate, but the guy could turn workaround like that. I mean,
Yeah.
he's fantastic. So, but yeah, he never phones anything in.
He
It's
doesn't, does he? I love his work. And we can talk a little bit about Prez now, because I think because we'll leave him behind with issue two, won't we? But so born 1954, New York, in the South Bronx. He's now retired, and I think that's down to an eyesight issue, is it? As off the top of my head, is
Yeah, that's what as well, yeah.
yeah. Deathlok, Sons of the Tiger, White Tiger, The Avengers, Creatures on the Loose, Man-Wolf, The Inhumans, The Fantastic Four, New Teen Titans, Justice League, Crisis, Wonder Woman. Super, he's got a list, you know. I remember.
It'd be hard pushed to find a big two character he hasn't drawn.
Yeah, I think so. In both on
Seriously.
both sides of the aisle as well. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, he for me it was him and Byrne. They were the two guys for me when I was coming up in comics.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And they were the two in competition. So you had Teen Titans versus X-Men. They were the two sort of big reads for me. I don't know. Was that your period? Was it Pete?
Yeah, as I said, it was harder to find X-Men comics, and I was mostly a DC guy back then.
Right.
Eventually, I rediscovered Marvel,
Yeah.
but yeah, I was mostly a DC guy at the time. And when I first found a comic shop, that's when Burns' Superman was taking off, no pun
Right.
intended.
Yeah.
And and that blew me away. It was a fantastic reworking of the character, and yeah, but that's again another story for another time. Yeah, great stuff. But Perez, I remember again as a boy, one of these random issues that you find just out in a newsagent's. One of them was the Secret Society of Supervillains story
Oh, okay.
in Justice League.
Yeah.
And it was Ultra Humanite, who was the big white ape
Yeah.
kind of character. It's all hyper detailed. The issue that I picked up has got that classic cover of all the heroes getting their X's put across their faces, a bit like
Right.
the X is the future past,
Yeah.
kind of similar to that. And it's all hyper detailed in that issue, focusing on all the villains, and it is incredible. It's absolutely incredible. It's a three-parter, and that was the first part, and it took me years to find the other two parts.
That was the way it was back then. Yeah, you used to think,
Hello?
oh God, am I going to find the next issue in the newsagents? That was the way it was, wasn't it? Sadly,
You
yeah.
find kids today that, and oh, they won't believe
Yeah, I know.
it.
Yeah, people would be dropping off stories left, right, and centre. But yeah, I mean, I found more a strange choice. I was a more convert from DR and Quinch, I suppose, is the one that really turned my head around his stuff. And I just found him a strange one. I was worried, I think not worried, because it's not, the world's not going to end, isn't he? But I was a bit curious to say that he's, because he was, at this point, even by that point, he was famous for deconstructing stuff, wasn't he? He was famous for taking old characters and like revamping them. You know, he had Marvel Man and a few other, you heard about the Watchmen, the stories going on. He'd done Swamp Thing. He has a few things he'd done like that. And I thought, what's he going to do to Superman now, you know? But I think rather than deconstruct, he almost throws too much at the wall, almost too much Superman lore at the wall, doesn't he, with this one? Everyone
Yeah,
appears, don't
there's
they?
definitely But you can tell, he's got a love of the source material himself. I mean, the actual fact that he starts off with the words, "This is an imaginary story," just harkening back to
Yeah.
those classic, Silver Age stories.
That's
And
actually a
then he
lovely
finishes that.
paragraph. Yeah, it really is.
Yeah. He finishes with, "Aren't they all?" Beautiful. Well done, Alan. Well done.
Yeah, that is. I read that. I just reread that just before we came online. And I thought that's so such affection for the style and everything like that.
And
Yeah.
the lettering as well, we're still in the short. The lettering for that opening paragraph is done in this sort of kind of legendary heroic script, as if it was
Yes.
like unraveled from a
Prince
scroll.
Valiant or something
You
like
know, as
that.
if,
Yeah.
yeah, exactly. So, you know, this is a story of legend. This is, you know, epic heroic proportions here. You
Yeah.
know, you can tell from the very first page, from the very first word, that's what it's going to be, and it's sensational.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So.
So the story goes, he sort of appears, and it begins to get quite dark, doesn't it, straight away.
Very quick.
Pete Ross, who's a sort of has a, was a sort of long-standing supporting character, was at the same TV station as Clark and Lois and that sort of thing, and he was always a bit of a sort of bully. Often he was the Flash Thompson, wasn't he, to Superman, to Spider-Man, sort of thing.
That's Steve Lombard. Pete Ross was like a boyhood friend of
Sorry,
Superboy's
sorry. Yeah, I'm
who.
getting them confused. Yeah, sorry, man. You're right.
Oh,
Yeah, P P yeah.
okay.
Pete Ross is the one who's killed. So yeah, so that even has more impact than that, doesn't it? Yeah. I'm thinking.
Discovered Clark on a camping trip, and but he never let on. So you know, and he always protected it whenever he thought it was under
That's
threat.
right.
That was always like a running theme. And Steve Lombard, funnily enough, does not appear in this
He
comic,
doesn't, does he? No,
which
that's
is,
maybe why I thought it was him there, because of the setting
yeah,
and stuff. Yeah.
it's one of the few things that doesn't actually happen in it.
Yeah. So he finds Pete Ross, and Pete Ross is dead in a box, which is
Yeah.
just bizarre. Yeah. A lead-lined
Well,
box,
the.
presumably.
Yeah, but the thing is, it's trapped by the Toy Man and the Prankster, and they've got all these like, toy action figure Supermen flying about, destroying the newsroom, and it reveals Clark's secret identity just as he goes on air,
That's
literally.
right. Yeah.
And
But
the horrible thing is, it's not just a box he's in; it's like a Jack in the Box, except with Pete Ross's corpse in it. And there's even it's horrible. The sound effect in it is a big massive sprong,
Yes, yeah, so
and
very Toy Man, wasn't
that's
it? Yeah.
fierce. That's absolutely hideous because they weren't well, they had killed both Toy Man and the Prankster had killed back in the Golden Age when they first appeared.
Right.
But again, that's something they kind of got rid of in the Silver and Bronze Age. But yeah, it's they weren't killers, they were just you know,
There they were kind
shopping.
of, yeah, Superman's villains were always a bit weird, but you enjoy, like, there's a villain who appears later, they do that with, who appears right in the end of the second issue, isn't there? Who's one another one of those sort of half joke characters that suddenly more makes more serious. Yeah, it's like that, isn't it? Yeah. So we've already got this sort of darkness coming on, and we've got a slight change in style with Perez's inks over the top of Kurt's pencils, and you've got the writing of more. Some great dialogue in this, I have to say. Really, really good dialogue, and I really enjoy what he's doing. But Alan Moore pays attention to the tropes of the Silver Age. So when Superman's bursting through the wall to catch the Toy Man and the Prankster, he actually says something, you know, which is classic Superman, isn't it? You know.
Well, he sets it up with another fantastic line where, you know, he's talking to Toy Man and Prankster over the sort of radio action figures.
Yeah.
And he says, I've got to ask you a question. Do you know what radio waves look like? Then he flies off
Yeah.
first through the wall and says, because I do. And oh, it's just
Yeah.
sensational.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So he's setting him up as this sort of super powerful character who can't be beaten, who surprises people and thinks ahead of them as well. You know, at that point, isn't he? And then the next bit I wanted to just mention to you was we get Lex. Did you want to run through? Did you want to just tell the listener what Lex does? Because it's creepy as F, isn't it? It really is. You
Yeah,
know.
and again, speaking of Superman movie, this completely reminds me of Gene Hackman's. This feels very Gene
That's
Hackman-y
true,
because it's not
actually.
Lex in the power suit, and it's not Lex in like his like purple leotard sort of
Yeah, it's
thing
not
that he had.
the Spider-Man versus Superman suit, is it? Yeah.
No, it's not at all. It's Lex in like you know the Arctic gear, with a beep 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 machine tracking something in the Arctic, and he
Yeah.
just follows up and he discovers the last remaining part of Brainiac. Now this is Brainiac who was the proper like Terminator looking robot sort of
Yeah.
Brainiac,
The one that Gil
not the
Kane
cheap
drew so well. I think there's a couple of covers that,
yeah
yeah, gorgeous covers he drew on him. Yeah.
fantastic one. Yeah, so yeah, he finds you know, the last remaining part of Brainiac, which is his head, and he thinks great, I'm going to like salvage this technology, found out so much, and then I can use this to my advantage. But as he does this, he picks it up and the scales for Brainiac's heads come off. They just animate, they crawl up him and they can't do anything about it. And they attach themselves to his scalp and
Yeah.
basically take over his mind. And they basically pilot Lex Luthor.
Yeah.
Yeah, so Lex is utterly helpless and is this vessel for Brainiac.
Yeah.
And Brainiac says, "I welcome you to the new Brainiac Luther team." Oh, which again is another throwback to the teams that they used to have. But it's hideous. Absolutely
It
hideous.
makes him into a zombie, doesn't it? It's like a,
Yeah.
and the way he forces each footstep forward is just so well done, so
That's
well written.
There's an entire page devoted to that, and you just feel it. I mean, Lex, a horrible character. You don't want to feel for him in any way, shape, or form. But
But you do
in
here. Yeah,
so
you do. Yeah.
both these issues, you're totally on the side. It's like, oh my God, it's horrible.
Yeah.
It's so ridiculously good. And also the fact Brainiac's face is just kind of above his eyes, so Lex can still see everything.
Yeah, that was
He
the
can
thing
still
I'm
see
surprised
what he's doing.
design-wise that they did, because I thought, the typical trope, isn't it? The helmet takes over and the eyes, But it's
Yeah.
almost like it's a weird mask, isn't it? Weird hat mask, like a helmet for a Norman warrior or something like that. It's got that sort of element to it, yeah.
I just think it makes it more horrible because
Yeah.
literally Lex, his eyes are open, he sees everything that's happening and he's got absolutely no control over it. Whereas, at
Yeah.
least if the mask was over him, he wouldn't be quite as aware.
Yeah.
But it just makes it all the more hideous.
Yeah.
And of course he leaves his beep beep machine in
And that
the
gets even
snow
worse in the next issue. There's a sort of auto movement of him in the last issue where he's sort of
behind
almost bent up and dead and
the payoff of it. It's
but
horrible.
motivated by Brainiac. Yeah. Yeah, let me ask you this question then. Do you think this book would be as respected if Alan Moore had written it under a pen name we didn't know it was him?
Yeah,
You do. Okay.
I
Okay.
do.
Yeah. I always wonder
Absolutely.
about that one.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
If it was Steve Stevens wrote this, people would be talking about who the hell is this Steve Stevens guy? Yeah, it's seriously, it's a perfect, as I say, it's a bridge. It's an ending and a beginning at the same time,
Yeah.
although they're not connected at all. It's just
We
so well
needed that
done.
closure as a fan. It's a fanny-ish thing to say, but we needed that closure, didn't we? Before
Absolutely, yeah.
the like because they depower Superman somewhat, don't they, when John Byrne takes over. And we needed that because I always just think, well, Superman can like push planets across, and we got to the point where Superman could literally do anything dependent on what the story required. And Byrne strips him back down a bit around that, doesn't he? In his
Yeah,
stories.
absolutely.
Yeah. Cool.
As I said earlier on as well, this part two was the first issue I picked up of this, and I didn't know who Alan Moore was. I
Yep.
was desperate to find part one. So
There you
yeah, I
go, that's
think
the
that kind
proof
of
in the pudding. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So
I've always wondered a bit about it. I'd kind of forgotten about it for a while, and you said, should we read it? And I thought, oh, I'll read it again. I haven't read it for many years, quite 20 years or something. And I thought,
Yeah.
no, this is, you can tell Moore loves it. You can tell Moore loves the story. It is different. There is a different feel to it. It's not the traditional Superman fighting, I don't know, the monster from, or he gets turned, they find, I don't know, kryptonite that's made out of pencils and he gets turned into a giant pencil or something, it's like that sort of thing. But the next page, the next couple of pages freak me out, perhaps even more. I remember there's all these sort of Joe Publics looking up at the Daily Planet TV studios, sorry, newspaper studios, and they all open their shirts and they're all Metallo, aren't they?
Yeah.
It's just bizarre. It's just strange.
Well, the original Metallo was only in one issue, and he got killed in that issue, and this is his brother avenging him. He's been in quite a few other Bronze Age Superman stories, but this is his brother trying to avenge his death. Actually, the original Metallo first appeared in, it's been reprinted quite a bit, because he first appeared in the issue that was Supergirl's first appearance,
Oh,
so
right. The other one flying out the spaceship, that one. Okay.
so that's been reprinted quite a lot, so
Yeah, you
yeah.
probably get that on Comixology. It's a shame because not all Supermans by Kurt Swan are on Comixology. There's actually not that many, which is a real shame because I thought, oh, I'll read it on because I'm lazy. I can't bother to move about 30 boxes to find them. And I thought, I'll read a couple while I'm sitting there watching the telly. And there was very little on there. It's a shame, really. Yeah. Cool. So we're moving on a bit. So things are happening. People are appearing. Crypto appears. We get a little moment with Lana. They head up to the Fortress of Solitude. And then I remember thinking, well, that's weird at the time because the Silver Age Supergirl appears with the Legion of Superheroes, or the three members, or a few members of the Legion of Superheroes, didn't she?
Yeah, well, the well, it's basically it's a team, I think it must be from around about Legion issue 200, judging by the costumes and the
You can
lineup.
tell from her hair, can't you, sometimes? I think Supergirl's hair, some of that,
Yeah.
when she, yeah, the period, yeah.
The thing is, obviously Supergirl
She
had
just died,
died.
that's the thing, yeah, and Perez had drawn it.
Yeah. The weird thing is, in the page before she appears, Superman's actually walking past a statue of Supergirl in the fortress, which
Yes.
is a really nice setup touch, just to give it that extra shock when she comes out of the time bubble. By the way, I love the fact that if you want to travel in time in the DC universe, you have to have a giant glass sphere. No matter what who's traveling through time, that's what you do. You need a giant glass sphere, and that's you can go anywhere,
Rip
anyone.
Hunter's
That's
got a lot
fine.
to answer for, hasn't he? Let's face it.
That's right.
And these are the Legionnaires I really liked. So you've got Brainiac Fives there, he was great. You've got Cosmic Boy, Lightning Lad, Invisible Boy. You know, this is the classic lineup. The stuff that Kurt had probably drawn quite a few times. I know Kurt had even
He
done,
did.
was it issue 300 of Legion? He did, I think, as well, didn't he? He'd done quite a few Legions here and there. Yeah.
Yeah, he did a big action adventure run in the 60s as well.
Yeah.
Came
Yes.
he came
In Adventure Comics, you
to
mean? Yeah.
He did a few in the actual Legion itself run as well, from Umbrella Superboy and the
Yeah,
Legion
some in the Bronze Age. I mean, some
earlier.
around this period, not more than a couple of years before this, I think he did a couple of stories. I think, didn't he do the wedding of Karate Kid? I've got a feeling he did that, didn't he? Off the top of my head.
Oh, fans. Testing the
What's
memory
wrong with
off.
us? What's wrong with us? We should know this stuff. Now we're getting to the point I wanted to ask you about. Now I was listening to Grant Morrison being interviewed. I can't remember whether it was Fat Man on Batman or not, but he said it's not Superman. He said because Superman doesn't cry.
Now, here's the thing.
Yeah.
You don't actually
You don't.
cry.
You see, he's got his head in his
It's
hands, hasn't he?
implied. Yeah. And Lois is, when she's doing the narration, she says it looked as if he'd been crying.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
But again, you've got his head in his hands, you've got Crypto looking at him sympathetically, but you don't see him cry.
Yeah.
Of course, the Legion have dropped off the statuette to him as well, which is a very important plot point, of him holding the Phantom Zone projector. That's a very strange statuette to give him. What could that
Yes.
possibly
Yeah, what could happen with that one? Also, that's that one page splash. It's beautiful. I love it. I think it's a lovely page. But it's a little bit modern art. What's that thing on the left? You know, I'm sure that he's tied a lump of metal together at some point in one of his issues, but it strikes me as a little bit modern art. But then again, he's a man that's got was it a gold kryptonite room, you know, that he
Yeah,
clearly
he's
hasn't built, you know, at some point. There's everything going on in this place, so that's maybe the modern art area, you know.
My favourite things in the next issue, but we'll go on to
Oh, cool.
that.
Okay.
Another bit I want to mention is the fact that Supergirl kind of like realizes, oh, I'm here, I shouldn't be able to be here, because Alan Moore brings in the whole aspect of you can't have two people in the same time zone, the same person in the same time zone,
Yeah.
or else back in the DC universe, the old
Apparently.
DC
Apparently.
universe, became a ghost. And Supergirl says, oh, my other self must be away and traveling through time somewhere. And Superman goes, yes. Superman's
Yeah.
actually very, he's actually quite quiet in these stories. He doesn't talk that much,
Yeah.
which is really
That
interesting.
sort of
Usually he's a bit more
slightly
robust, but
dramatic face Swan used to draw on Superman when he was saying something important. You don't get a huge amount of that on here, you know. There was an intensity in sometimes with Swan, but yeah, so it's more of a you know, there's great scenes where he's like patting the dog. The one of my favourite scenes was slightly earlier in the issue. Is it earlier in this issue? I can't remember. Which is the one now? It might be issue the next issue where is it Bizarro dies? Which issue does he die in? Or something.
That was we kind of skipped over that. That was
We
this
did, didn't
issue.
we?
That was the
Yeah.
first. It was the first death. It was only over a couple of pages.
Yeah, it was. So
But
it was all
again,
yeah.
Bizarro wanted to be a better Bizarro, and he thought, I have to be the opposite of Superman, so I'll destroy my world and come to Earth as an adult. So he destroys Bizarro world with all these Bizarros on it. So basically, mass murder,
Yep.
and comes to Earth and smashes up Metropolis, because that's what Superman wouldn't do. And then he says, well, Superman's alive, so I should be dead. And he exposes himself to blue kryptonite and he dies. And Superman basically goes, what?
Yeah, and
What
it's
just happened?
all within 2 pages, to be fair. That your description there is just 2 pages. And my favourite bit of dialogue is when he dies, he says, "Hello, Superman, hello."
Perfect Bizarro.
Yeah.
Alan Moore
Pitch
did his job
perfect.
there.
Pitch perfect Bizarro. Yeah, so that's good. Should we talk a little bit about Curtis Swan then? Should we talk a little bit about him for a change? So Douglas Curtis Swan, February the 17th, 1920 to June the 17th, 1996. As we've described, a clean, straightforward, readable style. Born in Minneapolis, for many, including me, my definitive Superman artist. He served in the military in World War II and worked on Stars and Stripes magazine. He also stayed in the UK and he stayed in Scotland, believe it or not, during his tour. So he's visited your fine land.
Of course.
Apart from a couple of evening classes, he was self-taught, which I find that incredible and quite nice to know sometimes. Yeah. He fell out with Mort Weisinger, who I think everyone fell out with Mort, didn't they, to be fair?
Yeah, I think it was the easiest person to get on with.
Yeah. There's the famous story of his funeral. And at his funeral, people were asked to say something nice about him, you know. And so that it was quiet for ages, apparently. And someone eventually went, his brother was worse. Which is like brilliant. Yeah. He did the Superman Daily newspaper strip for quite a while. He took over and replaced, in a way, Wayne Boring? I think it was on it before him, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He drew hundreds of comics for DC. Superman, Superboy, Legion, Superheroes, DC Comics Present, which was the Superman teen-up book at the time. Like you say, Boy Commandos. He drew a 7-issue run on Mask after this. Yeah, he drew Superman 3 and Superman 4 movie adaptions, which I have and read to death. He drew Jimmy Olsen, World's Finest. In Superman Annual Number 9, he actually appears and he helps solve a crime with Superman. And he gets to fly with him in that issue. That's a great issue, man, as well. Really good.
Excellent.
Yeah. And this was kind of, it's one of the many things that this was the end of, but this was kind of the end of his work, apart from the odd issue, like we say, like Mask. The kind of the end of his career, almost. You know, it's a shame, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I really wonder what you know, his thinking was when he got these scripts through and seeing these characters he'd worked on for decades.
Yeah.
I mean, at least, you know, like 25 years at this point from when he first drew Superman, I think. How seeing them, you know, be killed off and him being asked, I don't know if he felt honoured to do it, if he felt, I really don't want to do this, or...
Yeah.
I don't know. It must be really weird. I mean, he is the guy to do it. You know,
yeah,
he was...
there's no one else, is there? Yeah,
but,
for me. Yeah.
But yeah, it's another bit in Julie Schwartz's book, actually. He talks about he was at some gala evening thing and Curt Swan was there and John Byrne was there. And he thought, I need to do this. He ran over to Curt Swan with a pen and gave it to Curt Swan and said, give that to John Byrne, we'll take a picture. And yeah, there you go. So somewhere there's a photograph of, you know, Curt Swan handing the pen over to John
Byrne. Right, okay, that's a shame that's not surfaced. Yeah.
I'd love to see that somewhere, yeah. But apparently it was in Julie's book, so yeah.
There's a couple of interviews you can find of him online. There's a couple of, like, at small comic cons where the interviewer doesn't really know what she's talking about, but she's asking him about Superman and, you know, what was it like to start drawing him, and he had to point out that he wasn't the first person to draw him and all this sort of thing, you know. But he's thoroughly a gent, and he's got that sort of mess of, you know, wild white hair. He's wearing a sort of he's wearing, like, I suppose, Miami Beach older person's retirement clothes. You know, like a sort of like a flowery blazer and an open neck shirt, and he looks like he's got a good tan on him, you know. And he's sort of, you know, he clearly smoking the whole time, you know, on these sort of characters. But yeah, absolute class. I have to say, I remember over the period of reading something like Legion, you know, and I was a big fan of Giffen and, you know, that little run there. And then suddenly he did an issue, and I thought, I don't mind that because he's readable and I recognise everyone. And, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah, he did the odd fill in thing, and they were all great. Yeah, but you're right. Sorry, man, go on.
Of course, he's known to, you know, like everyone on the internet because he's the man behind one of the most famous memes, and that is the Batman slapping Robin across the face.
That's... I didn't know that. Ah, right.
That's him. We've actually got, there's in the Forbidden Planet in Glasgow, the Frank Whiteley did some art for us there, and there's a one of them is an homage to that, and it's you know, Robin saying, "Should we go and see Zorro?" And Batman's like back slapping.
Yeah, the movie they saw before the famous pearls got ripped off. Yeah.
So yeah, so that's basically, it was taken from Kurt's image that was blown up and Frank went over it all. So technically that image is Kurt Swan inked by Frank Quitely,
Ah, nice.
which is kind of mind blowing when you think about it.
Yeah,
But
I
yeah,
stayed
so
in
that
when I was in Glasgow. I think it's probably almost the last time I saw you do was I went to the I went to that hotel that Frank Quitely has drawn in
Oh,
every
really?
room. Yeah, I stayed there. It's
Absolutely.
a Thingy Red. I can't remember the name of it now. It's on the Clyde, isn't it? And every room has got different illustrations throughout it, and the bar's got superheroes flying over, and it's all Quietly Work. It's a lovely place to stay. Yeah, amazing. I couldn't believe it. Just a complete coincidence. I booked that place when I was up at
Mean,
Glasgow Comic Con.
he's such a vandal, isn't he?
He's what? Yeah, he is.
Just
Yeah, yeah.
such a
Such a
vandal.
so punk. He's so punk. Yeah. Now, let's talk a little bit about evergreens because DC for me has always had the advantage over Marvel by having more evergreens, more evergreen titles. So they've had Dark Knight, and they've had Longbow Hunters and Watchmen and Swamp Thing, and they've had books that will remain in book. Well, then we say evergreen. That's what we mean. Books that will remain in bookshops for so long. I actually think this is a forced evergreen. I think it's a great 2 issues, but it's always a. Whenever I see a trade of it, it's always got filler in it. It's always got other loads of other stuff in it.
Yeah, it's because it's only what 46 pages.
Yeah, it's
There's
very short, isn't
not
it?
really a lot else to. You see, I have to pad it out with other stuff. So, I mean,
Yeah.
it could make a nice prestige format on its own, but
Yeah.
that's pushing it even with that. So I can't understand what you're saying, but certainly it's of its time, but it's very of its time. But that's a good thing. It also
Yeah, that's
that
what
also makes
quite
the
right too.
timeless, which is a weird thing to say.
Yeah. I know the trade that
Bear in mind,
I've
it's.
I own a trade as well as the issues, and the trade I've got has got the Swamp Thing Superman DC Comics Presents, and it's got
Ah,
the
cool.
Gibbons Annual in it as well, to fill
Yeah,
it
it makes
out. Yeah. Sounds about right, doesn't it?
sense. The cover, actually, if it's the what I'm thinking of, the cover for that's been, is that the one that was redrawn by Bond?
What, for the annual, you mean?
No, I mean the cover for
Oh, for the collection.
for
I think
the
it is. Yeah, that rings a bell.
collection.
Let me have a look. Yes, it is. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. Yeah, it is.
Because he changed the lineup of the people that are on the front cover for that. I
Right,
think it's
okay.
a different lineup of the Justice League. And on the original Action Comics issue, you've actually got Kurt Swan, Jeanette Kahn, and Julie Schwartz at the front.
Oh, I'm going to have a
They
look at
kept
that
Julie
now.
Schwartz. They kept Julie
They
Schwartz for the
did.
collection,
Yeah.
but Jeanette and Kurt are gone, unfortunately.
Oh, that's a shame. I'm
There's
looking at
also
it now. Yeah,
there's
all
also two
right.
kids,
Yeah,
but
there are, aren't
there's a
there?
good.
Whose kids are those?
I've no idea, but they're playing with crypto anyway,
We
so that's
should
fine.
ask Leah if that's her. You never know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never noticed that before. That is very true. And
Yeah.
they're I think maybe it was a wise idea to get someone to redraw them because they're barely drawn on that cover, aren't they? The Batman costume's is quite badly coloured. Yeah.
We didn't mention either. The cover for both of them is done by Kurt Swan and Murphy Anderson, his longtime
Yes.
collaborator and inker.
Yep, and
Because
my
obviously
favourite
he'd
inker on him as
did
well.
interiors.
I'm going to say Murphy's. They were almost inseparable for a long run, weren't they?
Yep.
And I have to say Murphy's great. He's my favourite inker. Yeah. So moving on to the second issue, which is where it all happens. Everything gets thrown. Everything. All the cake gets thrown at this now, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
They're holed up in the Fortress of Solitude. All he's gathered all of the people. He's got Lana and Lois there. So he's got, wake up in the middle of the night, go to the other room.
Well, first of all, before that, you just goes flashes back to the reporter back in
Yes.
Lois's house,
Yeah.
and her husband comes home, Jordan Ellis. Interesting use of the name there, Jordan Ellis. Interesting. So yeah, he's your average bloke, nice guy, shakes his hand, and then we're off to the races with the rest of the story.
And
So.
he and we'll get to it in a minute. His crowning moment is the last panel of the comic, to be fair, but we'll get to that, I'm
Oh,
sure, in a
that
minute.
bit now. Yeah, yeah.
And it's kind of how would I describe it? It's Ghosts of Mars, Assault on Precinct 13. It's that they're stuck in and they're being attacked inside it by
Yeah,
a
base
gang.
under siege. Yeah, pretty
Yes,
much.
yeah.
Which is good. Yeah,
And I love
a
that sort of
classic trope.
storyline.
So,
Yeah,
oh yeah,
yeah,
without a doubt,
yeah.
that's half of Patrick Troughton's Doctor Who run. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
So.
and half of Carpenter's movies, let's face it as well. Yeah,
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 that's
yeah,
right. Yeah,
yeah. But what it does is it allows you to have the action and it allows you to have the personal moments inside, doesn't it? I think is the clever way of doing it, and I think that's a lovely way of doing it. And you get the Legion of Supervillains turn up, another favourite few characters of mine from the Legion comics. And you also get the death of Crypto. Once again, another death, another dog gets killed. We always seem to do on this podcast is dog killing comics. He dies.
Those two pages, though, with Crypto, that's an amazing two-page, bit of storytelling. Yeah. It is literally, I'll do anything for my master, and he just goes for Kryptonite Man.
Yeah.
And, you know, it really rips him apart as much as you can do in a Comics Code Authority book.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, and of course, Kryptonite Poisoning, that's him. But yeah, it's you know, good dog. That is good.
Yeah, I mean, they've already had that moment in the end of the previous issue, haven't they, sort of thing. Yeah. And then Superman kind of loses it a bit. He begins to lose it, doesn't he? So he actually begins to start injuring people.
Well, you've got we've sort of gone on past the bit where Lana and Jimmy get their powers.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Which was a bizarre moment.
Well, at this stage, you know, Supes has taken all his like close friends up to the fortress, including Perry and his wife, and they're a bit estranged at the moment. So, in a weird way, you see them go off to separate bedrooms, and then in the very next panel, you see Lois and Lana sort of like, you know, these two like frenemies. They're basically just sitting there consoling each other, thinking this is horrible, but we'll get through this. And it's a really nice moment for them.
So
you've got that, and then you've got in the middle of the night. Superman's having a heart-to-heart with Perry, and Perry's talking about, you know, I'm not sure about, you know, Alice and, you know, our situation, and then, you know, Supes is saying, you know, he's talking about his love of Lois and Lana, and as this is happening, at the same time, you get Jimmy and Lana just ransacking the fortress pretty much.
Yeah, which you Jimmy's would do. Like, you'd be scavenging for weapons, wouldn't you? Is what you would be doing.
Yeah. Especially that place. So Jimmy finds his Elastic Lad serum, which is awesome. And then Lana finds my favourite thing from the entire fortress, and that is, what's it called? The label is still on it in a very 60s Batcave kind of way.
Called
Magic Lake Water, Probable Unidentified Radiation Source.
But it's in a form of a hot tub.
It's a hot tub. So Lana strips off and gets in it because she's already had powers from it before, back in the 60s sometime. And then they go off because at this stage, you know, Brainiac's put this force shield around. When the Legion of Supervillains came back, they said, this is when, the reason we're back is this is when Superman's greatest foe defeats him, finally. So we're here for that, you know, because, you know, there's nothing to lose by being here, so let's turn up and we'll just help. And, you know, the absolute coward's way, it's great because they're just so snivelly. Lightning Lord's even got like a pencil thin moustache.
It's so Kurt Swan, that face of his, isn't it? The thing about this as well is I've just got, because I know that Julie Swartz used to like his writers to sit down with him and tell him the stories. Why don't we do this? And I've just got this image of Alan Moore sitting with him and telling him every crazy, nutty thing that had ever happened in a Superman family comic, you know. He goes, can we make Lois a black lady again? No, Alan. You know, it's almost like that, you know. What about Pink Kryptonite? No, Alan.
I am curious, black issue, that was a classic.
But instead of that, he puts Lana in a hot tub, gives her superpowers, and you get
one of the superpowers she gets at the time is super hearing, and as that kicks in, she hears Superman's heart to heart with Perry, and it's like, you know, Lana I loved as a boy, you know, I'll always love her and that's great, but you know, as a man, Lois is the only one for me, but I can't do anything about that because I don't want to hurt Lana, and that really, she picks that up, and then basically that
goes
just
for it, doesn't she?
She basically, at the end of that panel, the panel at the bottom of that page is one of my favourite things, and that is people with elastic powers, you know, running with big stretched leg. So Jimmy's running with his Elastic Lad leotard on, and Lana's flying away saying, nobody loves him better than us, nobody! And she's like totally, you know, all fired up the way, you know, redheads are. And off she goes.
But not until after something. I remember thinking, that's a bit saucy. Do you know what I mean?
We've already had, you know, we didn't mention it at the time, but the Lady of the Night, who was hanging outside the Daily Planet building.
Was that in the first issue?
The first issue, yeah. Trying to pick up Metallo.
Oh, yes, of course we did. Yeah, I forgot about that. He was too busy.
Yeah, $20. Which makes you think, is the Daily Planet building, is that in the red light district? I'm a bit worried about this. Or does like
Yeah.
Steve Lombard's like, is he like a regular customer that she was hanging about for?
Well, with all those cigars on the go, you do worry about Perry, don't you? He does look a bit Lothario-esque, and he looks a bit with that dressing gown. There's some Playboy-esque mythology going on there, isn't there? Yeah, he's always smoking that cigar, always in this. He's always got a big cigar on the go.
That's one thing I wish they'd done in this is there have been a couple of stories back in the Silver and Bronze Age called the Super Cigars of Perry White, where aliens gave Perry these cigars that actually gave him superpowers. They used to fly about fighting Superman. Seriously, folks, kids
Sounds
smoke
great.
cigars, you might get superpowers and fight with Superman. Ah, it's insane. Love that stuff. Just so bonkers. You'd
Now I need to
never
find
see
those
it these
issues.
days.
Yeah.
It's in at least two issues. Carrie Bates, I think it's Carrie Bates, wrote the sequel to the
Right.
initial one. It's in at least two, because I read the sequel to it. But yeah, it's absolutely bonkers. The Super Cigars, Perry White. Anyway, not in this story. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's mention the inking on this. So Kurt Schaefenberger,
Oh, yes, I haven't
just
done that yet.
December
Yes.
the 15th, 1920 to January the 24th, 2002. We lost him. American artist born in Germany, famous for working on the Fawcett characters. He worked in Captain Marvel quite a lot. Recruited by Otto Binder to work on Superman comics and Lois Lane. Used to he was by Mort, the famous Grumpy Mort. He was known to be the best person to draw Lois's face, if you knew that. And often he Weisinger would get him in to draw Lois's face where people had fucked it up. So in the same way that do you remember that was famously done in the Kirby Superman, wasn't it? Who was it who redrew him? Was it wasn't Ross Andrew, was it?
It's Murphy Anderson. Was it Murphy
Right,
Anderson?
yeah, sounds about right, yeah. Yeah, and he was got in and sort of ghosted over other people's art without them probably knowing, bearing in mind the times it was, to draw Lois, which is interesting. He got fired by DC for trying to start a union in 1970. He returned in 1972 and they all made up again. And he also, another one, he retired pretty much after this story, which is a shame. We lost all these, everyone, it was like a closing of the door. I mean, you hear people like Chaykin talk about this now, don't you? Saying they can't get work at Marvel or DC for their life,
Well,
a lot of the older
look
creators.
at someone like Jerry Ordway. I mean, Jerry Ordway can't get work down. His stuff's phenomenal.
Yeah,
He
yeah.
has he's storyteller and he's struggling to find work. It's just so
It's
weird.
awful, isn't it?
And
Yeah.
a fantastic storyteller, so much detail, and oh, just oh, I don't know. It's
It's
weird.
what
I
we
don't
need. We need that stuff.
understand.
We really
Yeah,
do. Yeah. So to me, this issue seemed more like a Superman issue. I'll be honest with you. It felt more visually, it felt more like what I was used to.
Yeah. They
The
kept all the action for the Action Comics issue, which I quite like. That's good.
Yeah. And then towards the end, you discover that, now I'm going to fuck this up, Mr. Mixelpick was the villain. That's what we discover.
Mix, yes, Piddleick.
That's well done. I'm not saying that again. I'm going to go over to you to say that from now on.
No, it's because it was in the Ask the Answer Man column that Bob Rozakis used to do. How do you
I
pronounce
love that. I love that column.
it? Well, that's all we start with. And then the Gold Age version is Mix, yes, Piddleick. Because
Right.
there's
It was different, wasn't it?
two.
And he looks even because there's a change. So spoilers. He actually turns out to be the villain. He also turns out to be a sort of reconstructed demonic villain, which is also that next nod to something different is coming. We get that. Moore allows himself that, and we allow him to do it. I think as a reader, we expect it. And but he actually looks a little bit more nasty, even in his. Is he a pixie? I'm not sure what he's meant to be. Is he some kind of sort of weird?
It's a fifth dimensional imp. There you go.
Imp, that's the word I was looking
Yeah.
for.
But the thing is, as well, that when he reappears, he's kind of got the colour scheme of a combination of colour scheme of the original Mix, yes, Piddleick and Mix, yes, Piddleick, the Silver Age one. It's kind of like, because it's the Silver Age one's more kind of orangey, the original one's more kind of purpley. So they've kind of put that in and given him goth eyes,
He
which,
really has, hasn't he? There's a touch of the Hellblazer about him there somewhere. He could be a Hellblazer villain there almost, couldn't he?
Absolutely. Oh, we've skipped over another really, really good bit as well. The bit where
Oh yes, I know what you're gonna
Jimmy,
say.
yeah, when Jimmy and Lana are trying to take down the force bubble that's surrounding the fortress. You've got Luther actually manages to force his will out to talk to Lana and say, "Brainiac's got me. kill me, Lana, please. And it's all like staggered speech. And she, Preyx saying, Luther, be silent, I command you, And Luther just goes, do it now. And she just goes, whack, karate chops his neck and snaps his neck. Luther
Yeah, she
gets.
does. Yeah.
Yeah.
In a panel that is, well, how many panels in that page? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. In the eighth of eight panels. It's not even like a splash, is it? It's just like, yeah, and it's a great panel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it's the storytelling in this is just sensational. You would not find storytelling like this today.
You
If
wouldn't,
this
yeah.
story came out today, it'd be at least six issues, at
Yeah, that was one
least.
of the, I was going to go there with that with you. I was going to say this
Yeah,
would be an event book, wouldn't it? Event series
oh,
of
without a
some
doubt.
kind.
Yeah,
Yeah, why
you'd have
waste
clicked
Alan Moore's writing on
words.
two issues when we can make this 22 issues? Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah, that is quite a moment, and it's not the end of him though, is it? He stands again. He's animated
Yeah.
again as a dead thing.
Even more hideous, yeah. See,
Yeah.
because his neck's all off to the side, and Brainiac's just like again piloting this corpse. It's
Yeah.
and he actually says, until rigor mortis sets in, he actually says it on there, and you go, oh, that's hideous.
Yeah.
What? What? No wonder I loved this book when I picked it
Yeah. But
up
that's
as
it's.
a boy.
I don't know whether I thought of this at the time. I've certainly thought of this when I've reread it. This is so heralding in what's coming.
Yeah,
They've looked to
that's what I
Dark
mean.
Knight
It's
Returns. They've looked to Watchmen's on the horizon. They know what's happening in comics now. It's getting dark, isn't it? Swamp Thing has turned the tables. This is what kids want. We're going to make it more adult, and which is kind of what Byrne tried to do with a little glint in his eye. He kind of went there, didn't he? I'm yet to be convinced about Byrne's run on it. I think Mr. Mulrain is going to come on and convince me, but I read it at the time. I
Oh,
enjoyed most of it, you know.
no, I really enjoyed Burns Run, to be honest. Yeah,
Yeah,
it's
okay.
strong.
Yeah,
As I
no.
said, that's the one when I first found a comic shop. That's the Superman that was out at that time, so I could get it all in a run.
Yeah.
There were some quite dodgy sexual things in some of them, but yeah, it was
Yeah,
certainly it
there were
was a
some
really good
strange
run.
moments, weren't there, in those, I remember. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, one or two or three.
Yeah. But then again, straight after he's animated, we get a big explosion where they're blowing a hole through the side of the Fortress of Solitude, and rather than run for their lives, Perry and his missus decide to go shagging, so they head off.
Well, they're about to die, so why not? They've
Yeah.
reconciled. Life's too short. Let's go back to my room, Perry. Yes, let's. Okay. I don't have any super cigars left. Let me just check.
Yeah, he's got one super cigar left, my friend. Yeah.
Yes.
There, I can't remember. I can't imagine I made that dirty, but I did. But the yeah, okay. So we get. Oh, we're an hour now. Look at that. We get he's always overrun. Pete, always overrun. But the so we get the moment of revelation, don't we? We get the moment of demonic energy. The more work. There's a little signpost of the more we're seeing elsewhere, and the demon appears. Solved by the fact that the statue he's got, which actually says his supreme hour, is the saving grace in this, isn't it? You know.
Yeah, as I said, it's a statue given to him by Brainiac 5 with him holding the Phantom Zone projector, which would make no sense ordinarily.
Yeah.
Again, we glossed over the previous issue, Supes asked Brainiac, so why, sorry, Brainiac 5, why are you here now? And said, we're just here to honor you. And everyone's kind of choking up. Saturn Girl goes back to the time bubble, I have a tear in my eye, sort of thing. It's
Yeah.
everyone's really emotional, and it's like, okay, this is this. It's like this means something. It's a Close Encounters moment. This means something.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yes, it's a big, big clue, and I think probably messing up the timeline, Brainy. But never mind. Okay. But
The
yes.
so he kill he essentially kills him by pulling him between two forces, the Phantom Zone and the fact that he's what is he
Trying to
doing?
find fifth dimension. Yeah,
That's it, yeah. Yeah.
The trope with Brainiac, sorry, not Brainiac, Mick Shespitalik, was if you made him say his name backwards, he went back to fifth dimension. And of course, when he sees the Phantom Zone projector, just a couple of panels before he uses it, you see an image inside the Phantom Zone. So they've even got the Phantom Zone criminals, guest starring in this, just
Yes.
floating in a panel.
Yeah.
And of course, he does try and escape by saying that at the same time, and it just rips him in half. You don't see him being ripped in half. You just It's explained that he was
Yeah.
destroyed
It's
by being
it was
between the
always a
two.
bit like that getting him to say his name backwards was always a bit like Billy's Boots for me. Whenever he turned up in a Superman's comic, I knew it's like Billy Boots. He'd always lose his boots, wouldn't he, and have to find them. I always knew, well, I was going to have to get him to say his name backwards again. This is what's going to happen.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, in the Silver Age, it wasn't about fighting crime, it's about solving the problem. Let's give the heroes a problem to solve, the kids can read it, and they can try and solve the problem with them. How's Superman going to get them to do it this time?
Yeah, you know, exactly.
It was just pure, great fun stuff. You know, about, you know, people being killed, or...
One of my favourite... one where he's the villain is where he turns the Daily Planet into all the walls into newspaper.
Yeah,
I love that issue so much. I remember I had that as a kid.
I had that as a kid as well. I got that from the local paper shop. No pun intended again. Great stuff. So
We kind of get a false ending, don't we? For those that think of this as the book where Superman dies, it kind of he kind of doesn't, does he? But some of the best writing for me is in this. Second to final, let's call the next bit an epilogue, shall we? But I just couldn't risk letting anything that powerful and that malignant survive, so I made up my mind and I did it. I broke my oath and I killed him. But you had to, you haven't done anything wrong. And he says, yes, I have. Nobody has the right to kill, not Mittelpick, not you, not Superman, especially not Superman. And then which is great dialogue. Like, Alan Moore must have loved writing that bit.
It was a score,
Yeah, completely. And then he walks into his gold kryptonite sample storage chamber.
Again, conveniently labelled. Everything conveniently labelled.
You wouldn't want to get up for a piss in the middle of the night and walk in there accidentally.
And, I'll be honest, I'd put a fake sign in that in case one of my enemies got in.
Yes, very true.
Emergency exit, something, you know, something else.
And then we get a sort of clear up, we get a roll up, and it turns out that his body wasn't found. They thought he'd walked through into the snow and died elsewhere, which is a big tell, isn't it? And the interviewer, you know, kind of tidies up and says, thanks a lot. You know, thanks for, you know, the chat. And he wanders off to his very science fiction-y looking car.
Well, it is the future. It is. We are 10 years in the future.
1996. Yeah. Everyone's got jetpacks by now. And you go back and the kid is sitting there and the kid squeezes a lump of coal and makes it into a diamond, obviously. Yeah. You know, the old classic. And then they decide to go off to bed and she's sort of, she's done a very sexy thing by baring her left shoulder, you know, from behind. She's looking over her.
A bottle of wine as well, you know.
She's suggesting something. And he just closes the door on the story with a big wink on his face. And you realise, that's Cal. Yeah,
and then you've got the Superman logo with the classic scroll of it saying the end.
Yes, perfect. Yeah.
Absolutely perfect.
Yeah, that's what you want. Yeah. Yep. So everyone goes, oh, this is the one where he dies. He doesn't. If you've read it, you know he doesn't die.
Superman dies.
I suppose Superman. He loses his powers and Superman is definitely no more. But Cal kind of lives a happy life. Jordan Ellis.
And also, in fact, he's taken on the name Jordan Ellis to honour his father. The baby's name is Jonathan to honour his adopted father, which is really nice.
Yeah, it's good.
I do love the fact that in this future house they live in, they still have a coal fire a big bucket of coal.
Because the gag wouldn't work. Yeah, exactly. What else are we going to squeeze? Something. I know what you mean. Yeah, that's great stuff, man. So I'm going to come to you and just ask. I'm going to get you to mark them out of 10. A couple of things before we do that. We're going to go to our advert.
Yeah.
So I'm just going to pause the advert for one of our sponsors. Phone hacking was cool, wasn't it? How about digging up dirt on celebrities just to ruin their lives, marriages and reputations? Or how about trying your best to get people sacked? Ha ha, here's a good one. Why not hack into emails, hold on to them for years and years, and then release them to ruin someone? Yes, you too can stoop to the depths with our handy course, $12.99 for 36 weeks. Go to paparazziforbeginners.com. Money isn't refundable and please pay in cash. So the prostitute man's gone missing because he's down the pub and the pub's closed. So we'll have to wait for him to come back. It's so good. So we've we've been through that. Lovely two issues. I really loved reading that. I hadn't reread it for donkey's years. I have little periods when I'm at Comic Marts where I pick up the odd Superman, occasionally because it's got a Neil Adams cover or something like that. And it's a real Superman family or Batman family or something like that. I love reading that stuff. There's a real nostalgia to it, isn't there? You know, Pete. which is why I'm looking forward to your podcast, my friend, which we'll talk about in a second.
Cheers.
So overall, 2 issues out of 10. What are you going to give it?
It's
the whole thing.
It's hard not to give it a 10. I'll be honest, I'm giving it a 10. Both art and writing, because they're both so different, but they work so well together. And as I said, it's a bridge between the old and the new, and it's just I mean, everyone should read this. It's, if you're interested in comics at all or history of comics, then this is definitely something, you know, that
I think you're right, you have to. Yeah.
And it's 1986. That was the year. That's the year everything changed.
Yeah, it was.
It's phenomenal. And that's literally just after that, it's just when I properly get in, then I just swept up as many back issues as I could.
Yeah, I was 17 in 1986, and it was like everything was amazing then, you know.
Yeah.
Like you say, Watchmen and Dark Knight and Swamp Thing and everything. Vertigo, you know, the comics that would become Vertigo were starting. And Marvel was kind of chasing DC, kind of had the lead, didn't they, a little bit for me at the time. But both sides were batting 10 out of 10s left, right and centre at the time. You know, and the comics greats who we now know, that was their era. The Franklins and the Alan Moores and all that little firm. Yeah. Good O. I was going to say, let's grade the artists, but I think that's unfair. I think they all work together, and I think they work together well. I think that's a good thing. Good O. Right. Thanks for that, man. Well, hopefully people will go and buy it. There's a few different, you can find it. If you have to be crazy not to be able to find this book. There's various trades and various downloads and you can find it everywhere. You'll probably find it in Waterstones when they reopen, all that sort of thing. It's definitely on Amazon. So let's have a little chat about your work. So we've got, tell us a little bit about the podcast. So it's a DC centric one, is it?
Yeah, basically I've teamed up with a guy from the Power of Three podcast, Dave Steele. That's a Doctor Who themed podcast. And we're having a look at the origins and the full history of the DC multiverse, and also the legacy of like Golden Age characters and how they were used in the Silver and Bronze Age of comics. So all the parallel Earth stuff
I love all that stuff. I used to live for those crossovers in Justice League, man.
Yeah. It's so much in it. The thing is, most people think it begins with Flash of Two Worlds. There's tons of stuff before that of different parallel Earths, and also Golden Age characters coming back and being used, and the Silver Age issues. It's really, really interesting. It's so annoying because we had to restart several times because we kept on finding more stuff.
How nice.
So we've just literally just launched the first episode. It's called the Earth 2 Podcast. And you can find it at the earth2podcast.podbean.com. You can also follow us on Facebook.
And hopefully any day now it should be on iTunes as well. I think it's the plan, isn't it? You've submitted it, so it takes a couple of days sometimes. Yeah.
Should be up anytime. And once that's up there, we'll start rolling out the full episodes. It's just a teaser up, just now, just a taste.
Teaser got me like, oh, fucking hell, I want to read these books now. I'll tell you what it made me want to drag out. It made me want to drag out my old All-Star Squadron issues. Because
we are so looking forward to getting to that. Yeah, there's a lot to get to before that, but there's so much.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Roy Thomas's name checked a lot, especially early. There's letters from Roy Thomas in comics back when he was a comic fan, asking about some of the Golden Age characters, and we covered that as well. So yeah, great stuff.
Oh, there's some great stuff there, and I always think the best. I remember reading that All Star Squadron issue where they had them all. They had like a roll call in a big room, them all sitting up and down steps, and
the double page spread.
That's the one. And so, the characters in that I hadn't heard of as a kid, thinking, "Fucking hell, who's that? What's that all about? What do you mean bees? What's that all? You know, it's like that."
it was like the Legion again, except you know the Legion in the past.
Yeah.
Except they weren't as powerful as the Legion. It's just really interesting. And of course, they're fighting Nazis. Who doesn't love punching Nazis?
Yeah.
Well, apart from other Nazis.
Great stuff. And then you got the Amazing Man, and you got all this sort of thing, and it almost became its own. Like Liberty Bell was great, and Johnny Quick, and it's so good. Oh, and the art was outstanding. I remember cycling about 8 miles and finding the first issue of that, and it's still bad, where I'd rolled it up and stuck it in my back pocket. Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, good stuff, and that sounds good. And also, I obviously know you from your book, The Lang Walk Home, which was a book about being a bit tiddly, needing a wee, and legging it home. What was the thoughts behind that, Pete?
It's based on a familiar story. It's a poem actually that I then converted into a comic strip because I thought the imagery was really, really strong in it. So I teamed up with an elite crack squad of Scottish talent to put the book together. And basically, we had one artist, Gordon Johnson. He drew the journey of the character, And had lots of guest artists on it as well, who drew all the fantasy scenes that happened to him on his route home. Basically, he leaves the pub late one night and he's kind of caught short on his way home.
And
And said,
there's some brilliant the way you walk when you really need a wee images in it as well, which do make me chuckle.
Gordon got that down to a T. I think he's had some experience there himself. So, yeah,
And
no.
have you got any issues left of you or?
Well, right now, if you want, you can get it for absolutely nothing. Yep, free of charge. You can get it
Nice.
from go to facebook.com/langwalkhame, and it's free. There's a link to a free PDF of it, so go there,
Oh,
get
come on.
that. You can also find me at langwalkhame on Instagram and Twitter as well.
And you're doing a themed covers thing, are you? Is that right at the moment?
Oh yeah, the cover art challenge.
Yeah.
There's a group on Instagram that basically put up prompts every month, and you have to like dig through your collection and take, a photo of a comic cover that kind of represents that particular image. It's works of
And
art.
wasn't there like
This,
a Quantum Leap version of it or something at one point?
yeah, there was a Quantum Leap. I think it was 2 months ago, last month.
Right, okay.
Yeah, and basically it's like Quantum Leap episodes, so you'd have to like look at the episode title and think, right, okay, so what have I got that could possibly represent that? And then you just like go dig through the back issues and just see what you've got and just take pictures and put them up. And it's a lot of fun. It's
Yeah, sounds great. Something to
if
keep
you
us occupied during the
yeah
lockdown. Yeah.
I get if you wanted to check that out, that I think that's a hashtag May underscore cover art challenge 20, I think.
Nice. Good
Off the
stuff.
top of my that's this month, so check it out.
Yeah, good. Thanks, that man. I really appreciate it. That was absolutely brilliant. We had I really enjoyed reading those books, and he had some great insights there. Really excellent. Yeah, we're doing well on this. Everyone's coming in with the both guns loaded with the information, which I'm loving. Yeah, people are doing their
Well,
research. Really good.
yeah, it's so dense, this book, these 2 issues, and obviously, filling it out with the back matter from the Julie Schwartz book is it's quite interesting for people. So, yeah,
Yeah,
there
I'm
you
off to order that now. I'm off to look on eBay for that one myself now. Yeah,
go.
definitely.
I use that a lot for the After Two podcast, so yeah, make sure you check it
Yeah,
out.
I imagine. Yeah, good. Thank you, man. So if you want to find my books, you can find them at neveronanything.bigcartel.com. On Twitter, I'm Ezoyez, Ezohyyz. You can pop over and listen to a proper podcast with proper people on it at awesomecomicspod.podbean.com or on the podcast catcher of your choice. Do you want to just give your contact details out one more time, Pete?
Yeah, sure. The podcast is the F2 podcast, and you can email us at gmail.com, f2podcast@gmail.com. It's the F2 podcast. By the way, 2 is the number 2,
Lovely, yeah.
for all of the social media. Twitter is, sorry, and Instagram, it's still the F2 podcast.
Yeah.
Twitter, it's podcast underscore Earth 2. I can't believe I know all this offhand. Yeah,
Yes,
so
you'll learn
follow
eventually,
us all
yeah.
there, and yeah, you can. You'll never miss an episode.
Yeah,
So there you
get right. Yeah, sign up, subscribe on Podbean.
go.
That, yeah, it's the best thing you can do.
Yep.
Good stuff. All right, dude, thanks for that, man. I'll catch you again soon, I'm sure, when we talk about another one. But yeah, thanks for that, Pete, and I'll speak to you soon, mate.
Always a pleasure, never a chore.